You know, politics has really kind of come in front and center here in our nation lately. And it's an interesting aspect about politics that one day your face is on Time magazine, next day you may be doing time. It's because of the abuse of power. And that's happened all down through history. In the book Absolute Power, Dennis Fisher opens with this story. A Bible school teacher was teaching her class of 7-year-olds. During the lesson, she asked the students, "Well, how many of you want to be in God's kingdom?" At that point, all the hands shot up, all except for one hand back in the back corner of the group there. It was little Billy. Well, she was worried about this, so she went back to little Billy and said, "Don't you want to be in the kingdom, Billy?" And he said, "Yes, ma'am, I do." And he said, "But not with that bunch." But it's an interesting point if you want to think about this today. It's a cute story, and it could be normally probably filed under the category of funny things that kids say. But if it's an adult that said something like that, we would take it quite differently, wouldn't we? And tragically, my point today is this is being acted out, this story, by many adults in the Church of God today. In this last era, the people of God are making similar comments. They want to be in the kingdom, but not with that bunch or that bunch, because they're saying only their church is the right church. And they're excluding people who might think a little differently or have a different view of a doctrine or something. And they sometimes get so bad, as I was, remember, we talked to Letty, and I had no idea what they were experiencing in that group, where they were told you can't associate with these people or those people, or families were split up, all because somebody had absolute power over their groups. And that's what's happened. People have split off, and the leaders of those groups have taken to themselves absolute power over those groups. And that's what has happened. They've given themselves absolute power, and they keep their members isolated, forbidding fellowship with outsiders. And so sometimes families have been broken up. Friends, longtime friends, become enemies. You can't read other people's literature. You can't fellowship with people from another group. What in the world has happened? It's the abuse of absolute power, something we are going to have to deal with. So they question if other people will even be in the kingdom of God sometimes. And they badmouth other people and other groups. And this is something God absolutely condemns, and yet they seem to do it without any consequence. Nobody's raising their hand. Nobody's saying, "Stop the insanity." Absolute power, run amok. Best of friends becoming bitter enemies. Families who once shared bonds with their brethren estranged. I remember myself, years ago, we were all zealous. We'd go to a spokesman's club, and they'd try to teach us how to speak some way or another. Anyway, but it'd be over like at 9:30 or 10 o'clock. We would be out in the parking lot till midnight and beyond, talking about God and talking about the kingdom and talking about how things would change and what part we wanted to play in that. It was all exciting. We were all united. And now we're all split up. And people's lives have been tragically hurt because of this. There's a lesson for us in this that I want to talk about today. So let's go over to 1 Samuel 8. If you will, I want us to start by considering God's people of ancient times, that is, ancient Israel. God was their king, but they decided they wanted to have a human king like the other nations. And so God honored their request, and he gave them Saul. And this would be a good learning experience for them. The Almighty warned them, saying this in 1 Samuel 8 and verse 10. And Samuel told all the words of the Lord unto the people that asked of him a king. And he said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons. He'll appoint them for himself, for his chariots and for his horsemen. And some shall run before his chariots. And he'll appoint him captains over thousands, captains over fifties, and set them to ear his ground and reap his harvest, and to make his instruments of war and instruments for his chariots. He would use other people for his own benefit. And he'll take your daughters to be confectionaries and to be cooks and to be bakers. And he'll take of your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servants. And he'll take the tenth of your seed of your vineyards and give it to his officers and his servants. He'll take of your men servants and your maid servants, your goodliest young men, your asses, and put them to his work. He'll take the tenth of your sheep, and you shall be his servants, and they shall cry out in the day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you, for the Lord will not hear you in that day. So this is how it works when leaders grant themselves absolute power. The one in control rules everyone else for their own personal benefit. And that's what it's always about. So God gives them their king, 1 Samuel 9, 1 and 2. Now there's a man of Benjamin, whose name was Kish, son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Bechorath, and the son of Ephiah, and Benjamite, a mighty man of power. He had a son whose name was Saul, a choice young man and a goodly man, not one among the children of Israel, a goodlier person than he. From the shoulders upward, he was higher than any of the other people. So Saul really looked good on the outside, and this is the way we actually like it. This is how we like it. And I remember, and you just have to forgive my politics here, but I still remember the time that Al Gore and Clinton were running for president. And Time magazine had a picture of them on the front cover. And I looked at that and I said, these guys look like talk show hosts. They were so good looking. In my mind, I said, I know it doesn't matter who they run against, they're going to win because the people like the good looking ones. And so I knew they were going to take it. So anyway, forgive me for that. Anyway. In verse 9 here. And for thine asses that were lost. Oh, what happened here? I'm sorry. Yeah. How does that happen? Okay. Oh yeah, and the asses of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. No, that's not what I wanted to do. My point is on whom all the desire of Israel is, and not on thee and all our father's house, was the scripture. So Samuel presented Saul to the people in chapter 10 and verse 24. Even though I get off track, don't you guys get off track? You follow me in that. Samuel said to all the people, see you him whom the Lord has chosen, that there's none like him among all the people? And all the people shouted, and they said, God save the king. And then Samuel told the people the manner of the kingdom, and wrote it in a book, and laid it up for the Lord. And Samuel sent all the people away, every man to his house. So King Saul, he seemed in his reign to sort of vacillate between humility, even sometimes fear, and absolute arrogance, fearing the people. You remember, he offered the sacrifice instead of the priest. He ordered a fast for Israel when they were fighting their enemies. See the kind of care he had for his people. He let Agag, King Agag, live as a kind of trophy to him and his power. And he kept the best of the Amalekites' cattle, killed the priests for letting David eat the showbread. He killed them for that. He attempted to kill David. In time, King David became the king. And King David loved God. He really did. He loved God. He became king in 1 Kings this time. 1 Kings in chapter 4. But King David got seduced by what? Absolute power. And so he liked battle. He liked war. He liked going out and fighting and killing people. He was a bloody man. And so he did that. But he also used his power to steal another man's wife and then ultimately kill her husband. And he was a man who loved God. He's a faithful man. And so then his son, King Solomon, reigned after him. And he asked God, could you give me wisdom so I could know how to rule these people in a right way? And so God gave him wisdom, but he was the wisest man in the world. People, kings, queens came from all other countries to hear his wisdom because they had heard of it. They wanted to see, is it really true? And they went away going, whoa, overimpressed. He had such enormous wisdom, but he also had absolute power. So what did he do? He began to tax the people, and he began building projects, and he wanted splendor and greatness and everything that he could have. And so he did make a beautiful temple for God, but he made a beautiful temple for himself, that is, his home. And he taxed the people unmercifully to get it. So anyway, he used their money for his building projects, just like God had predicted. 1 Kings 4 and verse 21. And Solomon reigned over all the kingdoms from the river unto the land of the Philistines and unto the border of Egypt. And people brought presents, and they served Solomon all the days of his life. And Solomon's provision for one day was 30 measures of fine flour and 80 measures a meal. Then 10 fat oxen, 20 oxen out of the pasture, and 100 sheep besides harts and roebucks and fallow deer and fatted flat fowl. For he had dominion over all the region on this side of the river, from Tisha even to Azah, over the kings of this side of the river. He had peace on all sides, and they dwelt safely at this time. And so the point I would make is this. Let's go over to 1 Kings 7. He had all this power. Absolute power is what he had. 1 Kings 7. But Solomon was building his own house 13 years. Can you imagine what kind of house would take 13 years to build? And he built also the house of the forest of Lebanon. The length thereof was 100 cubits. The breadth thereof was 50 cubits. The height thereof was 30 cubits. Upon 4 rows of cedar pillars and cedar beams upon the pillars. So down to 6 here. And he made a porch of pillars. The length thereof was 50 cubits. And the breadth thereof 30 cubits. And the porch was before them. And the other pillars and the thick beams were before them. And then in 7 and 8. And he made a porch for the throne where he might judge, even the porch of judgment. And it was covered with cedar from one side of the floor to the other. And the house where he dwelt had another court within the porch, which was the like of the work of Solomon, like was the like work. And Solomon also made a house for Pharaoh's daughter, whom he had taken to wife, like unto his porch. And all these were costly stones according to the measure of huge stones, sawed with saws within and without, even from the foundations to the coping, and so on the outside towards the great court. The inside of the temple was covered with gold. The buildings were made of the best materials and precious stones, and he built his own throne of ivory, and then he covered the ivory with gold. And the people worked, and they served, and he taxed them to do it. So he started with a heart for God, but he had absolute power. And when you have absolute power and human nature and human ego, we don't seem to be able to handle that as human beings. So unrestrained, people with absolute power can do whatever they want to do. Whatever they want to do. So he tried everything he had ever imagined. The extravagance had absolutely no end. 1 Kings 11. Ultimately, he used his power for himself. He used it selfishly. 1 Kings 11, but Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, and Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Lord had said unto the children of Israel, you should not go into them, neither shall they come into you, for surely they will turn away your heart after other gods. And Solomon clave to these in love, and he had 700 wives. 700 wives that were objects, you understand? Do you think he loved them, their personalities? They were objects. 700 wives, princes, 300 concubines, and the wives turned away his heart. And it came to pass when Solomon was old, his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. Where Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, went not fully after the Lord as David his father. And so as a result, God rose up enemies to attack Israel for what he did. In fact, it was his own servant, Jeroboam, who attempted to kill him. And God didn't let Jeroboam kill him, but he went down to Egypt is what he did. But finally, Solomon died. And his son Rehoboam said, I'm taking the throne, and I'm going to tax the people even more than my father. I'm going to have more than he had. And so God did what? He rose up that servant that wanted to kill him and made him king over Israel in the north. And he separated the two kingdoms and they divided. And so they had war between the two. And in 1137, God placed his enemy over him. 1137. And I'll take thee, you, and you shall reign according to all your soul desires, and you shall be king over the 10 nations of Israel. And what happened to Jeroboam? He was given absolute power. Absolute power. And what was the first thing he did? God raised up these enemies against him. And now Israel was fighting against Judah. And he used his power to serve himself. So what his biggest threat was that the people of Israel were to go down to Jerusalem and keep the feast there once a year. And so Jeroboam was saying, well, wait a minute. What if they start allying themselves with Judah down there? You understand? So he had no other choice in his mind. I'll just make a different feast and have the people come and worship up here at Dan and Bethel. But you understand, he had no right to do that, but he had absolute power. And so he could do whatever he wanted, and he was going to look out for his own interests, and that's what happened there. And they were split, and things just degenerated from this time. So eventually, those 10 nations of Israel became just like any other pagan nation. Just like any other pagan nation. So, Hoshea was the last king of Israel, and he murdered his predecessor, King Pekah. And he seized the throne and refused to pay money to the Assyrians who had control over that area. And say, so Assyria came down and destroyed everybody. You understand? One king says, no, I'm not going to do this. You know, he kills somebody else, takes the power to himself, and then does stupid things. And Assyria takes the whole country and and takes them, and they're scattered. Then he took Persians, and they took Persians and put the Persians where the Israel used to be, and they became what are called Samaritans today. And so there's just mass confusion that takes place, and Israel's lost to history. 1 Kings 14, Judah's in the south. And what do you think Solomon's son did? Verse 21 of chapter 14. And Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, reigned in Judah. Rehoboam was 41 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, the city which the Lord did choose out of all the tribes of Israel to put his name there. And his mother's name was Naamah of the Ammonites. And Judah did evil in the sight of the Lord. They provoked him to jealousy with their sins, which they had committed above all that their fathers had done. For they also built them high places, images and groves on every hill and under every green tree. And there were also Sodomites in the land. And they did according to all the abominations of the nations which the Lord cast out before the children of Israel. And that's exactly what we're doing today. And why are we doing it? So that those people that are in power can stay in power. They're doing what the people want instead of ruling righteously. So Judah's kings were sort of mixed, some good and some bad and so on. But a century later, Rome took over, and they put a man in charge of Judah at that time, and his name was Herod the Great. To please the Jews, of course, he remodeled the temple, and they liked that. He built the Wailing Wall, where a lot of people, Jewish people today, kind of, to me, it's an idol. They go and pray before that wall. Herod trusted no one. He took 10 wives and had many sons. And any opposition was met with immediate and bloody ferocity. He singled out individuals or groups for public execution, just to make sure everybody knew how the game was played. And if you make a mistake, what's going to happen to you? Killed his brother-in-law, the high priest, for seeming to be disloyal. His brother-in-law, Costobar, was killed afterwards. His son, Antipas, was executed for treason. And he's most noted for this, Matthew 2, the killing of the children. I ask you to think about this. None of us think we'd ever do this. None of us can even imagine such a thing happening. But the point is, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And yes, it's a familiar saying, but the truth is runs so deep, and it runs in every one of our hearts. And we don't know, if we weren't called of God and we didn't have the circumstances we have, we don't know what we would do to save our lives. We don't know what we do. Matthew 2. Verse 1, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east of Jerusalem, saying, where is he that's born, king of the Jews? For we've seen his star in the east, we're come to worship him. When Herod the king heard these things, he was troubled, and Jerusalem with him, and he had gathered all his chief priests and scribes of the people together, and demanded of them where Christ should be born. So, of course, they wouldn't tell him, right? Because they'd want to protect him, right? No, they want to protect themselves. They said unto him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for this is written of the prophet, and you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are you not least among the princes of Judah? Out of you shall come a governor that shall rule my people. And then Herod freaked, of course. And he had everyone from 2 years old and under killed. Babies, killing babies to protect himself. 16 and 18. And Herod, when he saw that he was mocked by the wise men, was exceedingly wroth, sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem, and all the coasts thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he diligently inquired of those men. 30 years later, Christ began his ministry. The religious leaders saw him as a threat, seemed to have the admiration of the common people. The religious leaders feared he would start a revolution. If that happened, Rome would come down and they would take all those people who had positions of power out of power immediately. That'd be the first thing. So that was their worry and their concern. It wasn't about the people of the land. It was about themselves. And so they turned him in, the priest, turned Christ in to the Romans. And then they beat him. And Pilate knew he was innocent. Pilate knew that. And yet he feared the people too. So he said, crucify him. And so the priest sent him in. The Romans killed him. And it was the Jews, the common people, that said, crucify him, crucify him. Just amazing what happened. Pilate had the power. Knowing he was innocent, he still did this horrible act. So this is the kind of thing that everyone will do. To save ourselves, we will lie, we will steal, we will cheat, we'll blame others, we'll even hurt other people because they, after all, hurt us. That happens every day in our lives, and it's happening every day in America today, and it's happening in the very Church of God. And this shouldn't be. And I ask us to consider this and make a commitment today not to do these things. It's protecting ourselves is where the problem is. It's having that power over ourselves and what we're going to do with it. So I ask you to consider for a moment the rest of the world. Genghis Khan united the Mongol tribes under his brutal rule, ordered the killing of every Tartar male over 3 foot tall. Everyone. Idi Amin was the butcher of Uganda. His opponents faced imprisonment, torture, and death. 500,000 Ugandans killed. Imagine that. Communist Pol Pot, 25 to 30% of the people in Cambodia. Any worker who made a mistake was tortured. You make one mistake on your job, get tortured, and eventually tortured to death. Imagine the mindset of this. So Adolf Hitler, everybody remembers, responsible for the death of 17 million people. And he had a very efficient and effective extermination program going. Jews, Christians, mentally, physically disabled. Joseph Stalin, 23 million people died under his rule so that he could keep power. One of the most evil dictators in history. The complaint would send a man to a labor camp for the rest of his life until he died. And it hasn't stopped, because there are tyrannic dictators still alive and still doing this evil in our world today. I want to show a brief video.
Dictators still in power. Number 10, Bashar al-Assad. Bashar al-Assad became president of Syria in 2000, following in his father's footsteps. He was the only candidate and won the election with 99.7% of the vote. Following his victory, he allowed almost no political dissent and...
How about the sound on your computer, Terry?
Brutal.
The family council.
dictators still in power. Number 10, Bashar al-Assad. Bashar al-Assad became president of Syria in 2000, following in his father's footsteps. He was the only candidate and won the election with 99.7% of the vote. Following his victory, he allowed almost no political dissent, and by 2006, there were an estimated 4,000 political prisoners in Syrian jails, where they faced torture and death. A civil uprising and subsequent civil war in 2011 has caused the deaths of over 400,000 people and more than 4 million refugees. Trying to hold on to power, Assad has resorted to dropping chemical weapons on his own people. By 2013, he had authorized the torture and killing of 11,000 detainees. Prisoners were kept in underground facilities, 70 people to a 5 by 6 meter cell. Children aged as young as 13 face electrocution, whipping, or having their nails pulled out with pliers. The conflict is ongoing. Number 9. Emomali Rahman. Since 1992, Tajikistan has been ruled by Emomali Rahman, who has the right to serve an unlimited number of terms as president and is also immune from prosecution. However, Rahman has enforced some bizarre laws on his people. These include banning the celebration of birthdays in public. One man shared a piece of birthday cake with friends at a bar in 2015. He was arrested and fined $500. In 2013, he also blocked YouTube in the country when footage emerged of him dancing and singing badly at a wedding. But Rahman's regime also has a darker side. Corruption is rife, prisoners are routinely beaten to extract confessions, and men of military age are regularly kidnapped to serve in the army. The most extreme example perhaps came in 2011, when Savradin Zuraev was arrested and sentenced to 26 years for plotting to overthrow the government. He was 7 years old at the time the crime supposedly took place. Number 8. Robert Mugabe. Way back in 1980, Robert Mugabe became leader of the newly independent Zimbabwe, and he didn't waste any time in silencing his opponents. Identifying the Yundabele community as a source of anti-government supporters, Mugabe sent in his feared 5th Brigade, a unit of elite soldiers trained by North Korea. Between 1983 and 1987, it is believed that they carried out a huge massacre, killing 20,000 people, mostly civilians. Many were forced to dig their own graves before being shot in public in front of their friends and family. The 5th Brigade even set up a concentration camp where prisoners were shot or burned to death. Now over 90 years old, Mugabe clings onto power through dubious elections and corruption. His policies have ruined the economy, with inflation reaching 79,600,000,000% per month in November 2008. Number 7. Alexander Lukashenko. Holding the dubious title of Europe's last dictator, Alexander Lukashenko has ruled over Belarus with an iron fist since 1994. Saying anything to insult him can lead to a 5-year prison sentence, and going against him is downright dangerous. He had his opponent in the 2010 presidential elections arrested. In a 2011 protest, which called on Lukashenko to resign, police arrested a one-armed man for clapping and a deaf-mute person for shouting anti-government slogans. Basic freedoms like changing job are prohibited for some, with agricultural workers needing to get political approval to move job or location. And in 2015, Lukashenko introduced the social parasite law, forcing unemployed people to pay the government an annual fee for not working enough. Under his leadership, Belarus remains the only country in Europe to still practice the death penalty. Number 6. King Mswati III. Africa's last absolute monarch, King Mswati III, has ruled over Swaziland since 1986, coming to the throne aged just 18. It's fair to say he makes the most of life as king. Currently, he has 15 wives and he's held contests in the past to select a suitable spouse. Those contests consist of thousands of bare-breasted virgins dancing for his pleasure. He once spent 10% of the country's GDP on an airport that hadn't even been granted a license to operate, and he's rumored to have spent $2.5 million on a private jet. While his personal fortune is around $200 million, 69% of his subjects live below the poverty line. Political meetings and media criticism is banned. Even berets or t-shirts showing support for opposition parties are forbidden. Number 5. Nursultan Nazarbayev. Since gaining independence from the Soviet Union, Kazakhstan has known only one leader, Nursultan Nazarbayev, who took office in 1991. Allegations of corruption have dogged his reign, and in 1999, when $85 million of state money was found in his Swiss bank account, Nazarbayev simply passed laws giving him immunity and legalizing money laundering. Further reports of corruption by a Kazakh newspaper saw their offices firebombed, and the body of a decapitated dog was also left outside with a note reading, "There won't be a next time." Political opponents are regularly arrested, and in 2011, opposition riots saw 15 people shot dead, along with almost 100 injured and widespread arrests. Those imprisoned claimed they were suffocated with plastic bags, beaten, and forced to make false confessions. Number 4. Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbasogo. Such is Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbasogo's power in Equatorial Guinea that he claims to have gained 103% of the vote in some precincts in a 2002 election. Needless to say, he won that election. In fact, he's been in power since 1979 after overthrowing and executing his own uncle. Sadly, his citizens haven't fared much better. They can be detained without charge and held in appalling conditions. One teacher who was imprisoned was beaten so hard that he lost his hearing in one ear. He uses the notorious Black Beach prison to brutalize inmates who are starved and placed in shackles so tight they cut down to the bone. Mbasogo is even rumored to have dabbled in cannibalism, eating the body parts of his opponents in order to become more powerful. Number 3. Kim Jong-un. As the supreme leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un has carried on the regime of his father, Kim Jong-il, presiding over a totalitarian police state and a network of prison camps that houses up to 200,000 people. These camps are so brutal that mothers are forced to murder their own newborn children, and prisoners are forced into cages so small that circulation to their limbs is cut off until they swell and turn brown. Even the most minor infractions, like clearing up a spillage with a government newspaper, can see you thrown in prison. Since gaining power in 2011, Kim has purged key officials in the country. He infamously killed his uncle, Yang Song-thik, for allegedly plotting against him, and he had his image removed from all official photographs. Other high-ranking ministers have also been removed, some allegedly by being burned alive with a flamethrower or obliterated with a mortar. One victim was apparently killed just for falling asleep during a meeting. Number 2. Isaias Afwerki. Eritrea has been dubbed Africa's North Korea, and by some measures, it's actually more repressive than Kim Jong-un's infamous regime. According to Reporters Without Borders, Eritrea has the least free and independent media of any country in the world. It also has the lowest rate of cell phone ownership on Earth, and just 1% of the population can go online. It's this media blackout that has helped keep President Isaias Afwerki in power since 1993. Reporters and political prisoners are held in camps and tortured by being locked in shipping containers in the desert. Water torture, beatings, and electrocution are standard interrogation techniques. Fair trials are not common. All citizens must also do national service, which is supposed to last just 18 months, but in theory can last forever. Work consists of forced labor in agriculture or building roads. Female conscripts face sexual abuse or rape, up to 70% according to a former military trainee. Number 1. Omar al-Bashir. There is an international arrest warrant out for Omar al-Bashir, the current president of Sudan, who came to power in a coup back in 1989. He stands accused of war crimes by the International Criminal Court for allegedly overseeing huge atrocities in Darfur, the western region of his country. Fighting between rebels and al-Bashir's government has seen over 300,000 people die and a further 2.7 million displaced. His regime has been accused of hiding mass graves and using rape as a weapon, including an alleged incident in 2014 that saw over 200 women brutally attacked in the town of Tabit. Some of those sexually assaulted were under the age of 11. And, according to diplomatic cables made available through WikiLeaks, al-Bashir is thought to have siphoned off a fortune of $9 billion. Most people in Sudan get by on $2 or less per day. Those were 10 brutal dictators who are unfortunately still in power. Are there any others we should know about?
Answer, yes, there are others. So this is 10 of the worst who are alive today. Let's go to Daniel 11. Daniel 11. To me, this video is just a piece out of the life that so many people live in the world today because of rulers who have absolute power. And I remind you that there is someone coming that's going to be influenced by Lucifer, who was the first to misuse absolute power over the angels and over the earth. And so far, you and I have been pretty much isolated in our nation because of God's promise to Abraham. And God gave us America, and America became great based on following God's word. And we've taken so much for granted. Today, modern day rulers are ruling for their advantage. And that's why seemingly nothing can be done after months in Congress, because it's to their advantage. They're doing it for some reason. And so corruption has become rife in government. Corruption has become rife in our corporations today. And I say corruption has become rife in the Church of God today. We've witnessed the disuniting of the Church of God, the disuniting of America, and it's happening before our very eyes. And so violence, murders, rapes, violent protests, all of this is escalating in our country, and we see it happening. And don't think for a minute this is just a blip on the screen. This is the beginning of what's coming. It's going to eventually lead to a beast who is going to be vicious and terrible beyond most people's imagination. And Daniel 11, verse 35, and under his rule, some of them of understanding shall fall to try them. They're going to go in the tribulation and to purge them and make them white. I think this is an aside, if you'll let me say this. A lot of times people think the tribulation is God's punishment on them. It's not God's punishment on them. It is God's works that he's using the world to teach them how rotten the world is and how rotten human nature is, so that they will overcome. So the point is to make them white even to the time of the end, because that's for a time appointed. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and he'll speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and he'll prosper until the indignation be accomplished, for that which is determined shall be done. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall magnify himself above all. And in his estate he'll honor the God of forces, and a God of whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and with silver and with precious stones and pleasant things. And thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange God, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and shall cause them to rule over many and divide the land for gain. Who do you think the strange God is? It's the devil. It's Lucifer. You know, look, with absolute power, that beast is going to rule the world. And he's going to go down to Jerusalem, and his ego is going to allow him to go into God's temple that's going to be built there. He's going to sit in the holy place, and he's going to call himself no less than God. Do you see where it leads? We can't trust ourselves. We can't trust ourselves. He's going to cause such destruction, pain, and misery. And then finally, Christ is going to return. The seventh trump is going to occur. And God's people are going to be changed to spirit. And they're going to rise to meet him. And they're going to be with him forever. And then he's going to have them go out to various locations around the world. And they're going to rule. And they're going to stop this kind of self-centered rule. Now my question today is, kind of like the one asked of Billy. How many here want to be in that first resurrection? Yeah? Do you want to? Okay. Here's the point of the sermon. Those people in the first resurrection are going to have absolute power. They're going to be just like Jesus Christ. They're going to have the same power he has. If you are in that resurrection, you're going to have absolute power. And you are going to be expected to use that unselfishly for the benefit of those who you rule in whatever cities or whatever nations it might be. But there's a caveat. And it's this. Think. You have absolute power right now. God has designed it this way so that you would have absolute power over yourself. You have total control. There's nobody that can make you say anything or do anything or think anything. You have the power. You have the power over your eyes. You have the power over your mind. You have the power over your hands. You have the power to do whatever you want, no matter the circumstances. And people of God in the past have used that power to give their lives for the truth. You understand my point today? Look at the history down through time, and we can have a chance to change that. But we must first qualify by using the absolute power God has given us over ourselves to live that way of life now, in our time, and in our circumstances. So I say this, let's use that absolute power that He's given to each one of us to glorify Him in our lives.